Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Alice Slater. Alice Slater is New York director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. She serves on the Coordinating Committee of Abolition 2000 and on the Coordinating Committee of World Beyond War. And she has a blog at globalhousework.org. That's globalhousework.org. Alice Slater, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
I'm so pleased to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. I always consider you my go-to expert on all things related to nuclear weaponry, which I consider possibly the worst thing in existence. And so I think you have a pretty important position. What's happening? I've been seeing positive and negative news in terms of the abolition of nuclear weapons versus the construction of new nuclear weapons. What's going on?
Well, it's really back on the table. First of all, the New York Times, which is the so-called paper of record, had a front page article where they reported something that we insiders have known for several years, but it made it to the front page of the New York Times this late fall, that the U.S. is planning to spend $1 trillion over the next 30 years for new nuclear weapons laboratories, delivery systems, that means submarines, airplanes, and missiles, and new nuclear bombs. Now, why in the world would we be doing that when we haven't been able to use a nuclear weapon since 1945? They are so catastrophic in their consequences. There's science now coming out on the humanitarian consequences of nuclear war, which I think we knew but we forgot about. But now we have the physicians, International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, and the Red Cross telling us that we could wipe out the whole planet. We could wipe out not just humanity, but all living things if we were to have even a small nuclear exchange. First of all, the weapons that we have now, these hydrogen bombs, are many magnitudes greater than the bombs that totally destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're in a very perilous condition right now. Particularly, there are now 17,000 nuclear weapons on the planet, and 16,000 of them are in the U.S. and Russia. All the other nuclear weapon states have the other 1,000, and that includes China, England, France, Israel, Pakistan, and North Korea, and India. So it's really up to the U.S. and Russia to ratchet down this arms race, and we are in a terrible relationship with Russia right now because we're stirring up trouble over Ukraine, and it's going to be very hard to move forward. As a matter of fact, Obama negotiated this very minor cut in our arsenal with Medvedev when he was president of Russia, called the SALT Treaty, and the price he paid was this promise of the $1 trillion over 30 years for new bomb factories. So President Eisenhower really knew what he was talking about when he warned us about the military-industrial complex. There's no rational reason. This will not prevent the kind of attack that we saw in the Charlie cartoonist headquarters or the World Trade Center. You can't use nuclear weapons for anything.
In what sense was that the price he paid? Who was that a deal negotiated with?
In other words, the Congress, they ratified the treaty. You got to get two-thirds of the Senate for a treaty to be official. So Obama and Medvedev signed the treaty. And then he had to get ratification through the Senate. And in order to get the ratification, he promised them the kitchen sink. That's actually what happened, that Clinton started this in 1992 when he signed the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. This was finally, they were going to end underground testing. I mean, Kennedy wanted to get rid of it, but they only allowed him to end it in the atmosphere. So the nuclear test went underground. Then Clinton agreed to end them, but in order to get what he thought would be ratification, which he never even got, he promised the Congress another $6 billion for this so-called Stockpile Stewardship Program, which was advanced technological laboratory tests coupled with subcritical test. Now, what you might ask is a subcritical test. They're blowing up plutonium with high explosives 1,000 feet below the desert floor in Nevada. But Clinton said it's not a test. Like he said, I didn't inhale. I didn't have sex. I'm not tested. And meanwhile, when that comprehensive, not-so-comprehensive test ban treaty was signed, India objected because we didn't preclude the laboratory test and the subcritical test. And we went ahead and brought it out to the UN for signature over India's objections that we didn't cut off that additional technological advance work. And India refused to sign, and that's when India broke out and tested. They actually had the bomb in 74 very quietly, but they figured they had all the technology. They weren't testing like us. Once we were going to go ahead into this new advanced technology state, they didn't want to be left behind. So that's when they did full-blown tests in 98, followed by Pakistan. And we're just leading this arms race. I mean, from the very beginning, after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Stalin wanted us to turn the bomb over to the UN and make it under universal control at the time when we thought we were ending all wars and we were going to have a peacekeeping mechanism at the UN, and we wouldn't do it. And we thought, and we're doing this in every area. We're doing it with cyber war. You know, China and Russia, China proposed a treaty to ban cyber war. We blew them off. Russia and China put a treaty on the table in 2008, and they just reintroduced it now to keep weapons out of space. This is in the Commission on Disarmament of Geneva, where you can't do anything without consensus. And everybody voted for it except the United States, and there we blocked it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they tell us that we've got to be afraid of China, we have to be afraid of Russia, that they're creating new armaments, they're modernizing their web. Well, of course they are. We're not agreeing to stop the arms race, so they're not going to stop it.
I applaud everything you say, but want to disassociate myself from your use of the term we, as I don't identify myself with the crimes of the U.S. government. But I wonder also if there's a conflict between this building of new nukes that you say that the senators demand when they agree to a anti-nuke treaty with two things, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and the rhetoric and the image that people associate with Barack Obama.
Well, you know, it's very interesting right now. The Non-Proliferation Treaty was signed in 1970, where all the countries of the world agreed to give up their nuclear weapons, except the five that had them then, the U.S., Russia, England, China, and France. And everybody signed except for three countries, India, Israel, and Pakistan. They refused, and they got the bomb. Then this dumb treaty had an inalienable right to so-called peaceful nuclear power. Now, we now know that every nuclear reactor is a bomb factory. So North Korea got their peaceful nuclear power, and then they walked out of the treaty and built the bomb. So that treaty is very badly tattered. It was supposed to expire in 25 years, so it was signed in 1970. They all came back in 1995 to see whether they're going to renew it. And a lot of civil society showed up and said, well, if you're going to renew it, you know, make more tough demands for nuclear disarmament. Give a time-bound time for when you're going to negotiate a treaty to eliminate nuclear weapons. And, of course, the U.S. just blackmailed everybody at the U.N. and got the treaty extended indefinitely with very few conditions. The only thing the U.S. agreed to get the extension was that we were going to have a conference on a weapons of mass destruction free zone in the Middle East. Egypt and other Middle Eastern countries refused to extend the treaty unless we promised them that, because Israel has the bomb. They're the only ones in the Middle East now that have it.
Other than the United States.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're here, you know, but I'm saying an actual Middle Eastern country, they have. So, then we never delivered on that conference. And so they were supposed to have like 5-year reviews. In 2000, Egypt walked out because they never delivered. And finally, they tried to do the Middle Eastern Conference. They scheduled it for a year or two ago, and Israel refused to come. And then it went again. So we are now coming up to the, every 5 years, we're now coming up to the 2015 review of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And there's like a huge, wonderful movement starting from outside the nuclear weapons states to ban the bomb. Like, we have treaties that ban chemical and biological weapons, but we have no treaty that says nuclear weapons are illegal and nobody should have them. The NPT allowed the five nuclear weapons states to have them and make vague promises for nuclear disarmament, but nobody ever held them to their promise. So now we're going to get this ban treaty, and we've had 3 meetings in Oslo and Mexico and just last month in Vienna. And the non-nuclear weapon states are saying, if you don't do something at this 2015 NPT, we're going to make the 70th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which is 2015, the year that we say nuclear weapons are illegal. And they're going to move ahead without us. And that'll be very good, because there are a lot of very hypocritical countries cowering under the nuclear umbrella, like Japan, Germany, Italy, Turkey. They have nuclear weapons on their soil. The Netherlands and Belgium, 5 countries in Europe, have our nukes in their bases. They're all saying, you know, we're for nuclear disarmament and it's bad. But meanwhile, they're part of our nuclear umbrella. The NATO nuclear posture says, you know, we'll use them to deter our enemies on behalf of all the countries in NATO. So we're threatening nukes all the time, which brings me to this wonderful development from North Korea that is now threatening their nukes unless we stop our military maneuvers with South Korea. We still have 28,000 troops in South Korea. I mean, since 1955, when the war was over. And we're always threatening them with our nukes. So when people say we shouldn't be responding to their nuclear threat, I think they're just waving it, you know, using it to get some peace and the end of sanctions and the end of isolation. And I think this opening to Cuba is thrilling, and perhaps we're in a new, some kind of, you know, dissolution of the old ways, and maybe Obama, as flawed as he is, has some instinct that he wants to do the right thing. Certainly he took a shot with Cuba, and maybe he'll do it with North Korea. So I think it's very important that we support that initiative and tell our country, yes, we want to talk to North Korea, and we should cancel these military maneuvers with South Korea. Very threatening.
We're speaking with Alice Slater, who is the New York director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, among other titles. Alice, my understanding is that there has been an offer from North Korea, and it has been rejected by the United States. Is that accurate? You're speaking as if the initiative for disarmament has come from the United States. I'm a bit confused.
No, I didn't mean if that was a misunderstanding. No, it came from North Korea. I read about it recently. I didn't read that we rejected it.
Oh, I think you did. I think it was in that article in the New York Times, down, buried in the article,
right,
of course.
But I mean, we didn't officially reject it, right? I mean, somebody said something negative about it, probably from the government, but it wasn't like Obama saying, we're not going to do this.
Well,
so I think that there's still an opening. We shouldn't just take that as, you know, I think we should put a lot of pressure. And I know you don't want to say we when we're talking about the United States, but I am a United States citizen. I grew up with all the ideals and principles, and I've learned how far we've strayed from them. But I still think we have some very good ideals and principles, and it would be a great idea if we followed them. So I'm still we, the good we, that should say it's better to negotiate and talk than to keep doing war games. And I don't think it's a closed case, David.
Oh, I'm not for treating it as one. I'm for demanding that the United States negotiate,
right,
and take advantage of an offer from North Korea to consider getting rid of nukes. I couldn't be more in support.
Right, and maybe they'll hold us to account and say we have to get rid of some of ours. I mean, we need a little pressure, too. By the way, I don't know if I said that we and Russia each have like around 2,500 loaded missiles ready to fire in 15 minutes on high, what they call hair trigger alert, pointed at each other's cities. I mean, this is like insanity. And it's not that we're going to deliberately fire them. There's been huge accidents. I mean, a year and a half ago, a plane flew from the missile silo base in North Dakota to Mississippi carrying six missiles loaded with nuclear warheads, and they didn't even know they were missing for 36 hours. They loaded the wrong missiles.
Several years ago now. So this was several years ago now.
Maybe 2 years ago, not a long time ago. Over the course of history,
it was prior to Obama's presidency.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was. I do. Okay. It was, but there have been reports on it and so forth in recent years.
And more recent reports of drunkenness in the missile silo and things that kept carelessly. And there's a book by Eric Schlosser, on the state of the arsenal. And I have a copy of the congressional record that I saved when we were negotiating the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. And they were then trying to put in a kicker where they could do 15 additional tests. So there was a whole debate in Congress, and I saved this congressional record because in it they enumerated 38 cases where airplanes carrying loaded nuclear bombs crashed. And with just luck that they never went off, two of them spewed a little plutonium in Palomares, Spain, and Thule, Greenland, and one is still lying off the coast of Georgia. They never recovered it. So, I mean, we're really pushing our luck to have these things poised and ready to go. When who are we going to do? It's like shooting yourself in the foot. We're going to destroy our own planet.
Yeah, I think just the near misses and the misunderstandings and the accidents ought to be enough for any sane species to get rid of the things immediately. I wonder, Alice, what your view is on nuclear energy, because you talk about North Korea having taken advantage of the legality of nuclear energy to move into nuclear weapons. And here we are with this, as far as I can understand, fraudulent pretense that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, but absolute certainty that Iran is pursuing nuclear energy. What is happening and what ought to be happening on that question?
The truth about nuclear power is that every nuclear reactor is a potential bomb factory. I mean, Iran has it. They have no intention, they say, of making nuclear weapons, but there's nothing to stop them someday. Just like every country that has nuclear weapons originally got it through nuclear power reactors. And right now, after we made sure that Saddam Hussein's nuclear power wasn't being diverted to weapons, and, you know, we took everything away from him, so that when Cheney and Bush were saying he had the nuclear weapons, they were lying, because we knew from Hans Blix, this is the International Atomic Energy Agency that goes around certifying whether the peaceful program is truly peaceful. He certified that all the weapons work had been disconnected, and, you know. But, and then, so what happened to Saddam? He wound up in a hole in the ground. Then we took away Gaddafi's nuclear potential, and then we wound up also another one that was in, who was in the sewer pipe. I don't remember whether it was Hussein or Gaddafi. But, I mean, what do you think a country like North Korea thinks when they see that? I mean, this is like their protection. And also, now that that happened with Hussein and Gaddafi, guess who's getting nuclear power now? Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Turkey. These are countries that never had nuclear reactors. Certainly, Saudi Arabia does not need nuclear power. They have all the sun in the desert and the oil and whatever. And this is all they want, their bomb in the basement. Japan, you know, the ones that were bombed with nuclear bombs, they have a huge nuclear power establishment. And every couple of years, one of their generals says, let's weaponize them. And I met with Mayor Akiba of Hiroshima when he was a member of the parliament in 1995. And he said to me, Japan has the bomb. I said, what do you mean? He said, they have all the technology from the nuclear power and the enrichment. You know, Japan's enriching. Brazil is enriching. We're trying to stop Iran from enriching because that's the first step to making the bomb. But, I mean, if they just walked out and threw the inspectors out, there's nothing to stop them or any country that has nuclear power. So the answer is, even if you couldn't make bombs out of nuclear power, every place where there's a nuclear power plant, there are higher incidences of leukemia, birth defects, mutations. This radiation is so toxic, and the waste lasts for 250,000 years that it can damage us. I mean, when you think that all of recorded history is 5,000 years, what are we thinking? We shouldn't be making one more ounce of it. We should just figure how to isolate what we've got from the environment and keep it safe.
Yeah, it seems like more than a sufficient reason to get rid of nuclear energy. Never mind that it's such a poor source of energy, but you have propaganda out there pushing it as a green solution. I wanted, before we went too far through the show, to get to the topic of Ukraine in particular, because this seems like the most dangerous hotspot where the two nations with most of the nuclear weapons are in danger of coming into conflict. And you mentioned earlier what I think is the right perspective, that the United States is stirring up trouble in Ukraine. But most Americans are under the impression that Russia is stirring up trouble in Ukraine. What's the story there?
You know, all through the years that we were afraid of communism, I mean, I remember getting a pamphlet at a Queens College. Somebody said, yeah, you should read it. And it said, Communist Party of America. And I went home and I threw it down the incinerator without reading it. I was so scared to even hold something that said, this is what's happening. They're frightening us. There's like a whole disinformation campaign. The fact is that we promised Gorbachev when the wall came down that if he didn't object to a unified Germany coming into NATO, we would not expand NATO. And NATO was a military alliance to confront the Soviet Union. So when Gorbachev let go of all of Eastern Europe without a shot, I mean, that was saintly. And we acted in total bad faith. We took every Eastern European country into NATO, and we were proposing it to Ukraine and Georgia when this started to happen. And the president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, the legally elected president of Ukraine, opted to go with the Russian economic market rather than with the European Union. So we started fomenting dissent against Yanukovych, and we worked with like a Nazi throw-off, like Ukraine sympathized with the Nazis, and Germany and Russia lost 20 million people to the Nazis. I mean, so there was a lot of hard feeling there to begin with. And I think it's very interesting the way Putin took Ukraine. He had a vote. 80% of the people voted to go back to Russia, and not one shot was fired. I mean, I think one soldier was killed. I don't know how that happened. So that was like a peaceful leaving and going over to Russia. And the Crimea, that's their seaport. They had a 100-year lease on the docks. And if we're going to take them into NATO, into our military alliance, and fight them on the economic alliance, of course Russia's going to get its back up. I think and we have been now doing military maneuvers in Ukraine with Eastern Europe and NATO. I mean, this is like a monster. This is the Cold War redux, and who's starting it? Us. And the way it's being reported is really so upsetting, because it's the same kind of reporting that got us into war in Iraq. It's the same kind of reporting that taught us about the Red Scare all through those years. I finally went to the Soviet Union in 1989 on a delegation with the Lawyers Alliance for Nuclear Arms Control. And I noticed that every guy over 60 was walking around with his World War II medals on his chest. Every street had a monument to the World War II dead in Russia. You go to the Leningrad Cemetery, now St. Petersburg, there's like 400,000 mass graves from the Nazi siege of Leningrad. And my guide said to me, Alice, why don't you trust us? And I said, why don't we trust you? What about Hungary? What about Czechoslovakia? Why should we trust you? And he looked at me so sincerely, and he said, but we had to protect our border from Germany. And I looked at him, and he was telling me the truth. And I felt totally betrayed all those years that our government was saying the communists were on the march, they're going to take over the world. They weren't going to take over the world. They just dug into Eastern Europe. I'm not saying what they did was right or how they treated the Eastern Europeans, but they weren't coming after us. They were just protecting themselves. After all, Napoleon marched into Moscow, Hitler marched up to Leningrad, you know, and they had a siege.
And apparently the current prime minister there in Ukraine was just in Germany telling the Germans that the Russians had invaded Germany and Ukraine in World War II.
Oh, right. And that's really wild. That's wild. And when you talk to Eastern Europeans, I mean, they're so traumatized from the Soviet occupation, they can't think straight. You know, they want NATO, they want, you know, arms against them. They're still traumatized because Russia gave them a hard time, you know. They controlled them, and they shot people if they were and didn't behave, you know. So, you're not going to get a final. What we really need so badly is like a truth and reconciliation process, even in our own country. South Africa, everybody came, they said, tell the truth, say what you did wrong, say you're sorry, and you're free. And I think that's what we have to do, because there's so many murderers and killers involved, and they're so guilt-ridden, they're so afraid to give in or change, and because they know they're going to go to jail or they're going to be executed. So I think we have to, like, give everybody a pass. If they're willing to say they're wrong and they did it, and they want to make peace, and have like a global amnesty. I mean, South Africa was so brilliant. They avoided a total bloodbath by going into that truth and reconciliation process. I really hope we talk about it a lot.
Well, I think it's an excellent idea. And of course, you and I are both part of an initiative called World Beyond War at worldbeyondwar.org that is proposing to figure out other ways to break out of this cycle and set the whole institution of war behind us. Do you think that's something we're going to be able to move forward on?
I think if we can be laser sharp on the message, we can't have too many. I think if we just talk about truth and reconciliation for the next year, you know, and say, how are we going to stop all this back and forth of who's right and who's wrong and who's guilty? I mean, the criminal court, they can barely get anybody into the criminal court except some tin pot African dictators, you know, otherwise. And who gets it? It's like victor's justice. I mean, even at Nuremberg, we had this wonderful criminal proceeding and we found the Nazis guilty, but who held us to account for Dresden, for Hiroshima, for Nagasaki? I mean, it's criminal court winds up victor's justice. I think World Beyond War is a fabulous new initiative to get people to start thinking of new ways to talk and think about this. And I think there's a way to connect the dots, like the climate thing that's like, I mean, the two existential catastrophes of the world, quick one with nuclear destruction and climate destruction that'll just take a little longer. And we really have to start looking at how we move together as a planet to save our home and make life livable for everybody.
We do indeed. Very well said. We've been speaking with Alice Slater. She is New York director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. She's on the coordinating committees of both Abolition 2000 and World Beyond War. And her blog is at globalhousework.org. Alice, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks a lot.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.